Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Tonight, the two candidates for vice president will meet for their first and only debate. Democrat Tim Walz and Republican J.D. Vance are expected to generate fireworks when they meet on stage. But how big a deal is a vice presidential debate, really? But then how big of a deal is the office of vice president? It is a job that's been lampooned in TV programs like Veep, but it's a position that started as an afterthought by the drafters of the Constitution, but it now has become something that is more than just being a heartbeat away from the presidency. Tonight on the TBS program American Experience, they show us how the VP job has been transformed. Historian Joel Goldstein joins us. He is a featured expert on the program that airs tonight on PBS on KLRN in San Antonio. And Joel Goldstein, welcome to The Source.
It's good to be with you, David. Thanks for having me.
So the first vice presidential debate was in 1976 with Mondale and Dole. This is during the Carter Ford race for that. And I was really kind of taken aback at how, they were really going at each other. They were, living up to the role of the vice president as kind of an attack dog for the president. Is that seen as also part of the job?
Well, that was a vigorous debate. That first one, Senator Mondale, Senator Dole had, of course, debated each other in the Senate. And it was one of the consequential debates. Sometimes the vice presidential candidates historically have sort of had the assignment of leading the attack. I think the phrase attack dog is sometimes misused because there's nothing wrong in democratic discourse of pointing out the, your problems with the other side's position or leadership. The question is how you do it. And I think one only becomes sort of a hatchet person or an attack dog if you do it in a way that sort of violates democratic norms. But vice presidential candidates do oftentimes play a leading part of the negative campaigning.
Well, Mondale told Dole that he was a hatchet man. That was a quote. So, yeah, that happened.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
That was really in response to when Senator Dole attributed all the wars of the 20th century to the Democratic Party. And Mondale came back with exactly the response that you indicated.
It was not genteel. Polite back and forth. They were, and it made for a steering viewing. And so I'm wondering about like tonight's program. Do you think we will also see Walz and Vance engaging in heated debate?
I would expect that will at least be part of it. Our debates, both presidential and vice presidential, have become more contentious. It's not that long ago that some of the vice presidential debates were really pretty civil and friendly exchanges. I think about 1996 between Al Gore and Jack Kemp, or 2000 between Dick Cheney and Joe Lieberman. But I would expect that tonight's would include some vigorous exchanges, as well as some attacks on the presidential candidates of the competing tickets and defenses of the presidential candidates that each of the vice presidential candidates is running with.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or a comment about the role of vice president and how it has evolved into the one that we have today, which is the topic that is covered in tonight's program on American Experience on PBS, looking at the vice presidency. And so, Joel Greenstein, you've written directly about how there is this maturation of the vice presidency. How important do you see the job of being vice president today?
Well, I think the office, as it's evolved, is a very important position for a number of reasons. What people focus on generally is the fact that the vice president is one heartbeat away, the first successor. And in fact, on 9 occasions, either through death or in one case resignation, vice presidents have become president when their predecessor left office prematurely. There's also been situations of presidential inability. But beyond that, the vice presidency, as it's evolved, beginning with the Carter-Mondale term, has really become a across-the-board advisor, general advisor to the president, and somebody who takes on high-level assignments for the president, both domestically and internationally. That's been true of most administrations from both parties since the Carter-Mondale administration. And then finally, the vice presidency is the best stepping stone. Being vice president doesn't mean that you're going to be elected or nominated to be president, but it's a better stepping stone than any of the other. And then lastly, the vice president has such a large megaphone, such an ability to affect public discourse, that whoever is vice president will shape the content and the way in which we go about our public discussion as well. So for all those reasons, I think it's a very big job and it's a very big deal. And tonight's debate, as well as the PBS program, are big deals.
Right. So given the fact so many vice presidents have risen to the job, either through assassination, deaths, or removal of office, like Nixon when he resigned, it's 1 in 5 is basically you have a 20% chance of actually, you know, getting the big Oval Office.
Well, so 9 of the 46 presidents became there due to presidential succession. 6 others were elected president after being vice president, either when they were sitting vice presidents or as former vice presidents. So 15 of our 46 presidents, roughly one third, were vice presidents before they were president. So the chances of becoming president, if you're vice president, are far greater than any other position in our constitutional system.
So I don't know if this is true, and tell me if this is true. If Kamala Harris becomes president, if she wins the election, she will be the first person who was the vice president of a former president who was a vice president to become president.
It's not quite true. Thomas Jefferson was the vice president under John Adams.
Okay.
At the very beginning, under the original system, the vice president was the runner-up in the presidential election.
Right.
So Adams and Jefferson actually were the leaders of the competing parties in 1796 when they ran. Adams narrowly defeated Jefferson, so Adams became president, Jefferson became vice president, and then 4 years later in 1800, Jefferson was elected president.
But then we had the 12th Amendment, which changed
all. And then the 12th Amendment came in before the 1804 election, exactly. So that would be the other instance in which a vice president who becomes president after having served as vice president to a former vice president.
Right, so that's kind of interesting. All right, we're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. You got a question or comment about the job as vice president. Does it matter to you who the vice presidential candidate is when you cast your vote? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source comes back in 1 minute.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Does the job of vice president, whoever is nominated for that role, does that have an impact on your vote? Will you decide, do you make a judgment? Does it impact how you're going to vote for president based on the vice presidency? Give us a call. We're talking about the job of vice president, 833-877-8255. 1-800-825-8335-TPR-TALK. We're speaking with Joel Goldstein. He is a expert on the vice presidency. He is featured in tonight's PBS program, American Experience. He is the author of The Modern American Vice Presidency, The Transformation of a Political Institution, and The White House Vice Presidency, The Path to Significance, Mondale to Biden. So the first vice president to get elevated to the role of presidency was in 1841, and that was after the death of William Henry Harrison. Harrison died shortly after inauguration, and so John Tyler became president, but it wasn't even clear if he would become president. And it's really interesting, and you cover this so well in the program about how it wasn't really sure if he should become president or just acting president. Can you talk about that?
Sure. David, if I may, let me just add, in response to your previous question, it occurred to me that there was one other instance that really fits in with the program. And of course, many of the viewers will remember. And that, of course, was that Gerald Ford was the vice president to Richard Nixon, who himself had been the vice president to Dwight Eisenhower. So that would be another instance in which a vice president becomes president after serving as vice president to a former vice president. And of course, that figures as well very much into the PBS.
But he was never elected as president.
He was never elected, but he came up through the 25th Amendment, which is really a focus of the PBS documentary.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Yeah, we're going to get to
the 20. In response to your question about John Tyler, William Henry Harrison dies a month into his presidency. The Constitution is somewhat ambiguous as to whether the vice president simply, whether the vice president becomes president or whether the vice president simply continues as vice president but acts as president. Tyler insists that he's president and refuses to be acknowledged or recognized on any other basis. And so that creates the Tyler precedent. And so every other vice president who succeeds when a president dies is treated as is becoming president, not simply acting president, up until including Lyndon Johnson, who of course succeeds to John when John Kennedy is assassinated. It doesn't really matter much when the president dies, but the problem is that if a president is disabled, the Constitution uses the exact same language to describe the status of the president and vice president during a disability as during the death. So some people say, well, if Tyler is right, if the vice president becomes president when the president dies, then the vice president also becomes president when the president is disabled. And this interpretation makes it virtually impossible to transfer power from a president to a vice president when, for instance, James Garfield is in a coma for much of the 80 days between his assassination and death, or when Woodrow Wilson has a stroke, or when Dwight Eisenhower sustains three significant inabilities during the 1950s. So the Tyler precedent ends up having a significance that leads to the 25th Amendment, which is a big part of the story that is told in the documentary.
The point I want to talk about really quickly, we'll get to the 25th Amendment right after this, but when Tyler becomes president, he doesn't have a vice president, does he?
Exactly. And frequently in our history, when either a president dies or a vice president dies, the vice presidency is vacant. Up until the 25th Amendment in 1967, there's no means to replace a vice president until the next term. It's an indication of the low value that the framers put on the vice presidency as a functioning office, that when it became vacant, the thought was it wasn't needed to be replaced with a new vice president until the next election.
It's like the guy at work who goes on vacation for a couple of weeks and no one even notices. You know, it's like, well,
exactly.
How much work does he actually do around here? Not a whole lot.
Exactly.
But, you know, but the job is you are supposed to be the president of the Senate and be a tie-breaking vote. But if the Senate is not closed like we have now, then you don't have a whole lot to do. So,
Exactly. And really, for the vice presidents up through and including Alvin Barkley, who was Harry Truman's vice president, the main thing that they did was preside over the Senate. And as you say, tie-breaking votes rarely happened. John Calhoun had 31. Ironically, Vice President Harris, who is, like modern vice presidents, is primarily an executive official, part of the president's inner circle, actually broke that record due to the polarization and the even division in the parties and some other changes. But being president of the Senate is not the sort of job that would attract ambitious people.
So I want to ask you that about Calhoun, because I'm working off of memory here, but he was vice president for different administrations. It's like that. Well, he became basically, that was his, you know, his job to be the guy who had no job.
Well, exactly. He was John Quincy Adams's vice president. And then when John Quincy Adams was defeated by Andrew Jackson, Calhoun was still elected as vice president. So he served as vice president under both of them. He and Jackson had a famous break, and he actually voted against, cast a tie-breaking vote against Jackson's appointment of Martin Van Buren to be the ambassador to Great Britain. They had a big split, and Calhoun ultimately ended up resigning as vice president at the end of the term to become a senator from South Carolina, and Martin Van Buren was his successor as vice president.
So the 25th Amendment, let's get there. And so we had the Kennedy assassination, but we had the recognition that we needed a better system in place other than just a tradition for adoption of the presidency. So what happened?
So after the Kennedy assassination, I mean, here you have a vice presidential vacancy during the Cold War, that you have the trauma of the Kennedy assassination. You have the fact that President Johnson himself had had a serious heart attack in the mid-1950s. You have the two people next in line, Speaker of the House McCormick and Senator Carl Hayden, are advanced in years and hadn't been thought of as presidential timber. And so Senator Birch Bayh, the second most junior person in the United States Senate, really galvanizes an effort to amend the Constitution. And the 25th Amendment really did four things. It created for the first time a means of replacing, filling a vice presidential vacancy before the next election. It separated the situations of a vacancy due to presidential death, resignation, or removal from a situation where a president was disabled. It provided a means where a president could voluntarily transfer power to the vice president when the president determined that he or she was unable. For instance, if they were going to have a operation under general anesthesia, but then reclaim power once the inability ended. And finally, it created a means whereby the vice president and the cabinet, in effect, could determine that a president who was either unable or unwilling to acknowledge his or her own inability, that he was unable, and it created a complicated set of procedures to manage that situation.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of hot, overheated political talk, like, oh, we should have the 25th Amendment against President Biden. People said it against Donald Trump while in office. You know, it never goes anywhere. But that enters into the wingnut sphere of political discourse.
Yes, and you know, as a factual matter, there have been two instances where vice presidential vacancies were filled. First, when President Nixon resigned, when Vice President Agnew resigned, and Gerald mm-hmm. Ford was nominated and then confirmed as vice president, and then when Ford succeeded to the presidency and nominated Nelson Rockefeller his vice president. But also there've been a number of instances where presidents have transferred power temporarily, voluntarily to the vice president when they've had operations under general anesthesia. President Reagan did that. President George W. Bush did twice, and President Biden did. And a number of other presidents, including President Jimmy Carter, who's 100 today, were prepared to do so had they had to have general anesthesia. And, you know, we haven't had the situation where a president is clearly unconscious for a long period of time. It's a need to have a successor. And in that situation, I think that poses a situation where the vice president of the cabinet might very well, under Section 4, declare the president temporarily unable, and then the president, once the inability passes, might reclaim his or her office.
But the whole idea is create a system that not only creates stability, but also the understanding that we have a system in place for continued stability, and in a time when minute by minute, power is important. You know, we have nuclear weapons, we have attacks, all sorts of things happen all the time. We need to have zero ambiguity over who is in charge, right?
That's exactly right, and really well said. And that there's a need in our system for presidential continuity. There always has to be somebody at the helm. You also have to balance a number of other things. They don't want there to be a coup so that a president who is lawfully elected is ousted improperly, or they didn't want to have a situation in which the president's enemies could initiate a system or use the president's health as sort of a weapon against him or her. So the 25th Amendment in Section 4 really tried to balance a number of different variables to come up with a system to protect the president, but also to protect the country against the situation where the president was unable to discharge the powers and duties of the office.
Well, tonight, J.D. Vance, the nominee for the Republican vice presidency, the president that he would be working with, Donald Trump, is of advanced age. You have to wonder, you know, if his odds would be bigger than that one to five to become the president. And so we should people be looking at these vice presidential candidates with additional scrutiny, thinking they could be the president?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the fact that former President Trump is the oldest person to ever be a presidential nominee of a major party is significant, as well as the instances of political violence in our country raises the specter of succession. One of the things that's interesting about the vice presidency is that the last succession we've had was in 1974, more than 50 years ago. It's during this period of time since then that the vice presidency has achieved its greatest growth. So the greatest growth of the office has been as it's become a cross-the-board advisor and troubleshooter for the president. But the function of serving a heartbeat away remains part of the job assignment. And it's something that people need to be attentive to when they look at the two vice presidential candidates.
Something to watch for tonight during the big debate. You could also watch PBS on American Experience and their program tonight. The American Vice President is going to be at 7 p.m. here in San Antonio on KLRN. Joel Goldstein is the author of The Modern American Vice Presidency, The Transformation of a Political Institution, and also The White House Vice Presidency, The Path to Significance, Mondale to Biden. It was so great talking to you today. I appreciate you coming on board today.
Oh, it was a real treat to be with you, David. Thanks very much.
And The Source continues right after this break. Stay with us.